Welcome back to Sex Talks Podcast with me, your host, Salmanda Siloheda Iyambo. As always, I'm super excited to be here with you, and I'm beyond grateful that you chose Sex Talks Podcast once again. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to the Sex Talks Podcast family. Here, we are all about creating an informed and educated society of young people who can openly have conversations on sexual health matters while sharing their personal stories and hearing from experts in the field. We are recording yet another episode live from the BeFree Youth Campus thanks to our collaboration with the BeFree Studios under the One Economy Foundation. You can find this youth-friendly space at the Multipurpose Youth Center or online at BeFree Namibia. Joining us in studio today is Dr. Gaselin Hogobes, who is a double board medical doctor from People's Friendship University of Russia. She currently works as a medical officer in obstetrics and gynecology. Her work is rooted in her passion for women's health and empowerment. She is also a devoted Christian, mother, and wife that enjoys baking, swimming, and tennis as her favorite pastimes. We are delighted and honored to have you here on Sex Talks. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for making time from your very busy schedule to be here with us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've introduced you and you are a double board medical doctor. Mm-hmm. But beyond those titles, who are you? Just a brief introduction to our audience as to who are you beyond or outside of those titles?
All right. So they always say your title in terms of your profession shouldn't define you, right?
Yes.
So I would really describe myself as just a speck of dust trying to find my spot in the world and try to impact those around me. Of course, not only in my professional sphere, but also family and society at large, right?
Alright, we are here recording yet another episode on a very crucial topic, which is breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And as many of us are aware, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and the theme of this year is No One Should Face Breast Cancer Alone. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this episode is just to raise more awareness around how do we actually be on the lookout for this, and how do we support our loved ones so that we ensure that no one faces it alone. Mm-hmm. In the community as a whole. But before we can go about this, we just want you to please explain, as though you're explaining to a 16-year-old, mm-hmm. what is breast cancer?
Okay. So as a 16-year-old, generally in our life science or biology classes, we get taught on the physical appearance that a female should have as well as a male. Now, growing and developing our secondary sexual physical structures, breasts are part of that. It becomes a little bit more dominant and prominent in females than in males, just because of the ratio of hormones that are distributed between the two sexes. So fat tissue beneath the skin, as well as milk ducts, putting it quite bluntly, or I should say quite simply, for understanding, the milk ducts or the mammary glands, that is what encompasses a breast, as well as lymphatic drainage systems. So when we speak of breast cancer, it's how a young lady or man should stand in front of the mirror and say, this is what my breast looked like a month ago. Now it has changed. And the changes that are anticipated are not just growth without tenderness, but now I see something different. That could either be the nipple is now retracted, it's very tender, I feel like there's a lump, the appearance of the skin over my breast tissue is different, it looks like a little bit wrinkled or a lemon that has dimpled away. We have a term for that actually, that particular symptom. Or there's a discharge coming from my nipple, which I didn't have before. Or I have a growth in my armpit that wasn't there before. So if they're able to know what is normal and see what is abnormal with regards to their body, I think then they would be able to pick up that there's something wrong here and it doesn't fit into what I'm taught in school about my secondary sexual physical changes that are meant to take place.
I'm looking at you, doctor, and I'm tempted to ask, because what do you mean these are discharges? Is it normal for us to usually have a discharge from our breasts? And if it is, when does it change that you should be alarmed to say that something could possibly be wrong?
Okay, so generally, we are not supposed to have a discharge from our breasts. But there are exceptions, the way the body kicks in naturally. Breastfeeding women, they have discharges. Which is breast milk, right? A lady or even a gentleman that has a tumor that secretes the hormone in the brain, for example, that prompts the breast to secrete what we call, it looks like milk, basically, but to secrete that white-looking milkish discharge, then it's a different scenario, then it's pathology. So there are natural instances where a discharge is allowed. It can be when mommy is gonna breastfeed, or it is in the other instances a pathology, maybe in the brain, a tumor that releases a hormone that stimulates a watery white discharge right from the breast. So no, under normal circumstances, you shouldn't be having a discharge from the breast.
Okay. Now, if you can just walk us through, what are the three most common symptoms of breast cancer that one can easily be able to pick up and maybe be like, maybe I should pay doctor and visit something this off?
So, it's actually, there are quite a few, but I think the most common ones that we find are a newly developed lump or mass in the breast that the patient or client picked up on. Right? It might have been pain that drew them to actually examine that breast, right? Or a swelling or an enlarged nodule maybe in her armpit or his armpit. And that drew them to think, okay, why is this breast feeling a little bit more tender or has this lumpy sensation within, right? Or then thirdly, the discharge. That would be the major one. Right, if it has a discharge and then the looks of it retracted and the skin changes also sometimes play a role. So I would say those three major ones. Of course, there are additional symptoms that are constitutional, might start losing weight, feel a little bit more weak, and those are just now the symptoms that appear a bit later. Yeah.
Okay. Are you hearing more about this common these common symptoms that you're more likely to experience and those that you should be on the lookout for? Please do make sure to often look at yourself and just, you know, do those checkups to see if you may need to visit the doctor and do additional charges or changes that might need to occur. Now, as you look at it, what is the current state of breast cancer in Namibia? How does it look like?
Sure. It's actually quite a bit scary. I had a look at WHO's statistics with regards to cancer, and they looked at both the genders that are described. So in males, they had, prostate cancer was first. In females, it was breast cancer followed by cervical cancer. These are statistics from Namibia. And new cases that they discovered with regards to breast cancer were about 553 a year, right? And then that sort of, if you put that into the our population and check the ratios, it's quite a staggering number because we're not such a big population, right? So, and they have also listed it amongst the males. It's not probably as common, but they've listed it. And I think that should be able to raise awareness that this is probably something that we should be really looking into and be educating ourselves about. And the other statistics that Cancer Association of Namibia had given is the risk of probably getting breast cancer if you're 20 years and below is 0.6. But it increases by threefold when you're approaching 70 or more than 70 years. So 3.38%, right? And it's scary. Because if you have, what should I say, 10 women in a room, for example, and they're all less than 20 years old, one of them will have cervical breast cancer. Yeah. So it's on the rise. And what we're actually struggling with is late detection. Late detection that changes the course of the management and the profile of the disease and the impact it has. Yeah.
Wow, while you're speaking about late detection, I actually had a question for you in terms of why is early detection so crucial and how does this impact now Doris's breast cancer in women's lives if it's detected early compared to when it's detected in an earlier, only a later stage?
Yeah, so earlier detection means we can, you know, get to it, manage, and then a better outcome is expected. Early detection also means the spread of the disease or the cancer might not be that severe. It might just be localized in the breast or just in the milk ducts, and the management process for that is much more lighter than it would be for a much more advanced cancer detected only later. So it speaks to the preemptive treatment as well as if you look at lifespan after management or treatment for this particular cancer, how long a patient is able to survive. Okay, so detecting later is sort of just doing damage control and, you know, trying to make sure that they're comfortable. But if you're going to detect it earlier and you're a little bit more, you know, aggressive, you can actually expand life expectancy for the patient as well.
The life expectancy of the patient can be expanded if there is early detection.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it's important for you to always do self-checkups. This is why it's important for you to, when you see something as not normal or there's something weird happening, consult a doctor or go to your nearest health facility for you to be able to get the necessary assistance that you may need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're speaking cancer in both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And yet again, I had another question of, can cancer develop in men too? Because most of the time when you hear about breast cancer, we often look at women, but never really a conversation around men.
Yeah. So we have now studies. Of course, it's previously been there, but it's more prevalent now, that there is breast cancer also found in males, because we do have breast tissue in males as well. And if you look at the risk factors that patients have, genetics, lifestyle in terms of smoking, alcohol intake, if a patient is exposed to radiation other than the breast, that also increases their risk. If a patient has been on estrogen hormone therapy for whatever other reason, and it's a male or he's a male, then they could also be at risk of developing breast cancer. So it's not a taboo as people thought before. It is actually being proven that the tissue, the breast tissue, however little in men, can also, multiply rapidly, uncontrolled, and mutate. And that can then result in cancer as well, if not dealt with earlier.
Now, I'm just wondering, doctor, in terms of now the symptoms that we have in women that we should be on the lookout, is this similar to men as well in terms of now self-examination, the lungs and everything else, or is there something diverse when it comes to men?
So the symptoms would fairly be similar in males as well. So they would also have changes, skin, overlaying skin changes, either a nipple discharge or breast discharge or lumps. Yes, those are the things that they could also find. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And we're moving on to one of my favorite steps questions for this recording, because I'm looking at you and you have given us the common symptoms and what we need to be on the lookout for. But what are those essential steps that both men and women can be on the lookout for? What needs to know in order to perform an effective self-breast cancer examination?
Okay. So when we're teaching in schools and everywhere, we always try to keep things simple, but also effective, right? So there are three ways one could self-examine. And we always say once a month, do that, you know, so that you can establish where you are in terms of monthly self-examination and diagnosis if need be. So the first is in front of a mirror, of course. You can see whether there might be any asymmetry, what it actually looks like in terms of the overlaying skin, whether the one nipple or both might be drawn inward and no longer, you know, like perky, like people would put it. That would be the outer appearance. Then, and now we always say the second step is to place both your hands on your hips, arch your shoulders a little bit inward, and see if there's any changes in the size and the form of your breast when that happens, okay? So that generally speaks to whether there's invasion of the ligaments or breast tissue that attaches the breast to your chest wall. And then the third most common one that everyone, I think, is more versed with is you lay on the bed and you place the arm or the hand that's on the same side as the breast that you want to examine behind your head. And you use the tips of your fingers, right, to self-exam in a circular motion, going anti-clockwise or clockwise up to you. And you do that for both breasts, okay? That for you is now the feeling sensation of, is there anything that I can palpate within my breast, all right? And you can also do that to your armpits as well and feel if there's anything that's nodular or tender that wasn't there the month ago. So, yeah.
I'm looking at you and smiling because I'm feeling it in the case of now a woman, and it's almost that time of the month. And if you want to check the size and the tenderness of your breast, it's bound to be slightly different. And what time of the month do you advise that they do it so that they don't confuse the two?
So we're so, how should I say, fortunate that we are tech-swerving generation, right? So we have apps such as the Flow app that sort of give you a prediction as to your period is about to come in 3 or 4 days' time. That would not be ideal, okay? So if you are someone that really puts it on script to say, my period falls around the 8th to the 12th of every month, around there. So those four to, let's say, 4 days of the menses plus 2 days before, you wouldn't really examine yourself. Because, yes, it feels a little bit congested in your breast. It's a little bit more tender than normal, right? So you would place it after your period, which is like way before the next period's onset. And then what you would do is I would say keep a diary. And say, if I've examined myself, let's say 10 days after my period, and I didn't find anything in February, now I'm in March re-examining myself 10 days after my period. And now I find a strange mass, or my nipple feels funny, or now there's a discharge. Do you understand? Then, of course, it's a comparison made, something abnormal detected, and then you can seek the help. Or you can seek for a professional opinion if you have noticed something different.
All right. Do you keep track of your menstrual cycle?
Yes.
This is now one of those times when we put you on the spot to just, you know, ask you as an audience if you do keep track of your menstrual cycle. Do you need a reason to keep track of your menstrual cycle? I think this is one of those great reasons so you know when to actually examine yourself and when not to examine yourself. So we don't want to put you in a situation whereby you are so worried to say, what if I may have developed breast cancer? Whereas it's just that time of the month. We implore you to actually start having a diary or an app that you actually log when you log to actually examine this so that you keep the same time frame and you don't do it during that time of the month. Well, if you do start doing that, don't forget to tag us and just tell us how your experience is going with logging your menstrual cycle, logging when you do your exams, and let us know if you do need additional tips and questions that we can answer for you. Now, you've mentioned self-examination and how to do it in common symptoms. But now, let's see that I've done my self-examination and I feel like there's a lump or anything that is wrong and I go to the clinic. What can I expect my checkup to look like during this visit?
Okay. So ideally, when you come in, of course, we'll take your parameters in terms of your vitals.
Mm-hmm.
Then after this, the conversation you'll have with your doctor will be more history oriented. Have you noticed anything? Yes, I have noticed a lump. When did you notice it? Is there anything else associated with this lump? For example, have you lost weight? After that, we'll ask you, has your mom had cancer? Has your grandmother? We go back into your history as well. And it's very important to note. Thereafter, depending on the physical examination that the doctor does, there are a few things that they might do. First of all, depending on what is found, they might ask you to go for an ultrasound, also depending on your age, right? So it can be a breast ultrasound versus a mammogram based on how old you are, okay? And if it's a very prominent lump that is sometimes right in your face, I should say, then you might find in certain settings, after your doctor has referred you to a tertiary education, the next doctor that sees you might actually take a biopsy of that lump, okay? The sonar comes back, perhaps, and it says, no, it just looks like a, what we call a fibroadenoma, which is just, how should I say, firm tissue in the breast, but that's not malignant, right? And we feel like we're not going to intervene unless it causes you severe pain, right? But if the sonar comes back and says it looks quite dense, it's like it's in the milk duct, there's thickening, it looks very suspicious, then the next doctor that sees you might actually do a biopsy where they take that mass out, send it off, and we take it from there. That will only happen if we have made a full examination of you, also stated our findings and correlated those findings with the lump that we are examining. So there's quite a lot that goes on when you go for this checkup with the doctor, because it drives how are we going to manage you as well. Yes, so anxiety will be there in terms of the client that's coming,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's better to know what's happening to your body and be put at ease rather than staying in fear with something at home that could actually be very detrimental to you.
Let's take a quick commercial break and we will be back as we commemorate Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is October.
Hey, Sex Talks listeners. Ever wish you had a safe space where you can have honest conversations, get expert advice, and enjoy fun activities? Well, guess what? The Be Free Youth Campus is here for you, and they are not just another campus. They are your one-stop center for holistic clinical, mental, and psychological support for young people aged 13 to 35. The campus is open on Monday to Friday from 8 to 5 to all its members. Their services include reproductive health screening and referral, sexual transmitted infection screening and treatment, HIV testing, counseling and treatment, contraceptives, pregnancy tests, antenatal care, PrEP and PEP, pap smears, and more at only $8 Namibian per year. The Be Free Youth Campus also has programs such as chess, robotics, self-defense lessons, and so much more. Are you interested in being a member? Visit the campus to pick up an application form, or you can get one via the link in their bios at Be Free Namibia on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. They also have free Wi-Fi at their facilities. So if you are ready to ditch the shame, take charge of your future, and connect with other awesome young people, come down to the Be Free Youth Campus today. They are located on Bodell Street at the Windhoek Multipurpose Youth Complex in Katutura. For more information, visit them online at Be Free Namibia. Your journey to a healthier and happier you starts here at the Be Free Youth Campus.
You are still tuned on to Sex Talks Podcast with me, your host, Samantha Silohenda Iyambo. And joining us in studio is Dr. Khaseli, who gets to share more insights on cancer, specifically breast cancer. Now, Doctor, We've spoken about the anxiety that just comes with going to a health facility to check out symptoms and just confirm if it's really breast cancer or it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in what way can friends and family support someone that has been diagnosed with cancer? In what ways can we do that?
So it's always very important to support each other,
mm-hmm.
but an educated supporter or a well-informed supporter is an effective supporter. So you can have a diagnosis of breast cancer today, but if I'm planting fear within you as your support system, you're wanting to fight breast cancer or wanting to survive, it's also diminished, right? Your will to want to live. So how we can do that as family and as friends is to always look at who is affected. If it's a young person, right, that you are with every day, the personality of that person, if the person is a fighter or takes on life situations head on, you can always motivate them and let them understand it's not the end of the road or end of their life, right? It's not a death sentence per se. Coming back to also early detection, right? So if they've picked up something odd, they've now been diagnosed with breast cancer, we as the family members and friends can become their support system by always making sure that we are their treatment supporters. What do I mean? We go with them when they have their appointments. When they have their appointments and information is shared as to what is the next step in their treatment, we also ask the doctor what it means. We also get well conversant on where our family member is with the diagnosis and what the next step is. Okay, then the other thing we can do for them, once they start their treatment, they will have days where they feel very weak. They could be vomiting due to chemo. They could be going through physical changes where their hair starts falling off. You know, you could be that family member that comes and says, okay, let's go wig shopping. You look good in a wig, or let me draw your eyebrows for you today. Let me support you today by taking you to the salon where we actually shave off your hair and we now see it grow back. So it's not only being there, like, how should I say, buying something for them or not. It's also the emotional support that we need to give them. And once we understand what the disease actually is and what it requires from the diagnosed person to fight daily, then we as a support system will also be able to understand how we need to play into that. If they live alone, you can say, okay, let me come and live with you for the next 5-6 months that you're going to undergo treatment, and then we take it from there. We see how you might need help. If you have an appointment, let me go with you. Let me be your psychological support if you need some. If you are the intimate partner, yes, we tend to carry each other's burdens, right? Your husband will carry your burden to say, like, my wife has breast cancer. We are in stage one, or we, you know, it's advanced disease. And still, then the two of you can also seek help from psychologists, social workers, and then the effects of the disease can also then be explained to those that are around you, your children, what the outcomes may be, what the processes are in terms of now treating what mommy or daddy has, for that matter, or what your sister has. And it's a diagnosis that not only touches the person that's diagnosed, but also those around them. And the only way we can do it is by coming together and offering support in different facets and different phases of what the person might be going through.
That is how we can offer support. I was here taking notes because I'm looking at it, and you even mentioned the aspect of children. You also mentioned something about how we can then talk about what is affecting the sister, the brother, which is often a time something that is not discussed
mm-hmm.
in many households
mm-hmm.
until then. It gets to the last stage whereby it's either the person succumbs to this illness, or it's going to be a situation whereby it's going to be worse. And they keep asking, so what's happening to my sister? What's
mm-hmm.
happening to my brother? And this leads me to my next question, because there's a one time that I'm glad you're a gynecologist, because then you're able to actually just take us through again as to what advice do you have for discussing sexual health and intimate changes with our partners during
mm-hmm.
this difficult period?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this question can come in two parts. One, do during the time that you are either diagnosed or during the time that you actually check for any of this, because seeing that it affects both men and women, it's only right that if you're in a relationship, you can actually have the diagnosis together, all the self-examinations together. So how do we go about that one?
So it's actually very interesting because, right, I'm gonna take an example and say, if the person diagnosed is a female and she has her male partner or female partner, she can then ask to say, okay, let me say, on the road to diagnosis, when we're doing the self-examination, she can ask her partner to help her examine. It doesn't take away from the intimate relationship. In fact, it might even bring you closer, right? Why? Because we're now going to explore our body together in terms of now the person that is on the road to diagnosis and self-examination and just doing all of this. And when the diagnosis is made, your partner also has an understanding that they've been with you throughout everything. When you started self-examining, when you went to the health professional the first time, how the diagnosis was made and now how the treatment will follow. Okay, and being a gynecologist, it doesn't take away from sexual intimacy for as long as your person is emotionally and physically fit, okay? And it's a discussion that you have among the two of you, all right? So they might feel like, okay, no, I've been diagnosed with cancer. I feel weak today. I don't think I can. Then it will just be right for the partner to say, no, it's okay. Today we don't have to have, you know, sexual intercourse. Tonight we can be romantic in another way. I cook you dinner, I care for you in this way, I can give you a massage and just take care of maybe the pain that you might have, and then we take it from there. So it all stems from a well-informed partner or family member as well, you know. So the more we teach and educate, the better we handle the prognoses and the diagnoses that we get.
I love how you keep making emphasis on the well-educated family member or well-educated partner. And that shows the importance of us raising awareness about this issue so both of us are informed and can actually be active and supportive parents, supportive friends, a community, and above all, a partner. Now, when we look at the state of cancer in Namibia, what are some of now the resources that are available for either parties that are diagnosed with breast cancer in the country? Where can they seek help?
All right. So there is, rightly said, there's a lot happening in Namibia. And I love that we have so many NGOs in Windhoek as well as the regions outside. And there are a few facilities that I am aware of. Not only Cancer Association of Namibia, not only the state health facilities, not only the clinics, but also the Hope Cares Community Center. And then there's a community health center that's also along Bismarck Road in Windhoek. They can also go there. I know there are satellite NGOs also in the on the outskirts of Windhoek as well. But if they are really stranded, they can always approach a our public health service centers, which are our clinics, right? And from there, then we can upscale to our very neat, I should say, Bernard May Cancer Center here in Windhoek, at the Central Hospital Complex. And our surgery departments actually in the tertiary hospitals are doing a great job of now running campaigns. We have a breast clinic specifically run by a specialist and his or her team, and that manage that. And then we upscale if it is radiological oncology that needs to see or to offer chemotherapy or radical surgery, whatever the treatment plan may be, that can then be handled for the patient at our tertiary institutions. So just walking into any clinic or any cancer association, or even when you find yourself in a dentist practice and you say, I feel this way, we are able to direct you. or you can also just speak to anyone, your community leaders, they can also direct you where to go.
Those are the very mouthful of resources that you can be able to seek and where you can be able to get the necessary assistance should you feel you need them. Now, we are leaning more to the end of our episode, and we just have one final question for you as to what are those thoughts that you'd like to share about breast health and self-advocacy around breast cancer?
I would say know your body, because no one else knows their body. I mean, someone else's body as much as they know their own body. So, yes, we keep on singing every day, self-exam, 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 right? But do it. Just feel your breast once in a while, every month, and see what you find, right? And really, an informed mind. I have a mentor that always says, the mind will not grasp what the eyes have not seen and what the ears have not heard. So there are all these podcasts, all these screen time that happens, speaking about these things. Even on our devices, you just go on someone's status and you will see all these advertisements as to, or pamphlets as to how to self-exam. Read those. Get familiar with what's happening. Take a moment to, you know, understand your body, right? And if you don't, go somewhere like the Be Free Healthcare's clinic where they can teach you about your body as well, additionally, and guide you, you know. So be informed. That will put you on a platform to advocate for yourself, because then you would know what the needs are that you have and what the needs are that your body might have, right, in a certain instance. So be informed. Seek help when you find something that doesn't fit into what you are informed about. So, yeah.
I like how she said that nobody will know your body better than you. So do those self-checkups as often as you can, slightly or preferably once a month, and not the time of the month when you are on your menstrual cycle, because it won't be as accurate. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, we have come to the end of our episode on breast cancer awareness. Thank you so much for taking time from your very busy schedule to be here with us and share insights with us. And for our listeners who would like to hear from you too as to what your experiences and what other questions do you have when it comes to breast cancer that we can answer through our doctor that is sitting here in studio with us. Mm-hmm. You can connect with us, that is on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, or our website at www.sextalkspodcast.online. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and with that being said, amigos, adios, until next time.